Just was talking to a friend, by the way, last night about your film and the film that I saw in Toronto, which is by John Ridley, and
Okay, which film was that?
and
Oh, was that the dramatization thing?
it's called All Is By My Side,
Oh, yeah, that's,
and John Ridley got around the Hendrix family's restrictions. They had a kind of an official objection to it by not using any of his music, but only having him perform in the film. I mean, only cover songs.
like Hey Joe and Sergeant Pepper and Killing Floor and stuff like that,
And the it's interesting. The guy who plays him is Andre Benjamin.
I know, I've heard about it,
He's pretty good. I mean, what he does is that he doesn't really he's not light-skinned enough. But otherwise, he really does sound like him. He has the way that Jimmy kind of talks, that kind of rambling stream of consciousness way, So I was just wondering, has there been has anybody in your corner? That was my first question. Have you seen it? Did you have any feelings about it? Because you're heavily immersed in the Hendrix legend, if you will. Or has anybody in the Hendrix family?
I haven't seen the film. I'd like to watch it, but I think those biopics, it's often, I've seen some great ones. I've seen the Johnny Cash one, and I've seen a whole bunch of biopics, and I've seen the one on Jim Morrison, and I've really enjoyed them, right? But then when I've met people that actually knew Johnny Cash or knew Jim Morrison, they've always said that actually it's fiction. So I think, I watch it, and I think if you don't know the guy on screen, then you're taken in by it. I didn't know, Ray Charles. I watched the biopic. I really enjoy it. I speak to people that met Ray Charles, and they say it wasn't like him, So I think, with biopics, I think as long as you take them as a work of fiction, it's like, that's all you can do. It's a fairy story, and I think that, and I think, if you want to make a film about Hendrix, I think, great, go ahead and do it. But it's hard to make a film about Hendrix if you don't have Hendrix's music in it. And because if you haven't got Hendrix, if you haven't got Purple Haze or, Little Wing or Axis Boulder's Love, what do? There's a tendency to focus on the tittle-tattle, the mythology and stuff. And that, that's fine. If you want to make that sort of film, I'm not interested in, that sort of film, in actually making that sort of film, unless it's true, because I know that, like I say, I watch those films and I always enjoyed them. I watch, like I say, I've seen most of those films, but they always are, they are a work of fiction, and I think the fact that, I don't know why they don't allow them to sort of use the songs, et cetera, but, it's like the Beatles were the same, when they did the, the Backbeat film, was the Beatles in Hamburg, and, I went along and I quite enjoyed it. I met George Harrison, I met Ringo Starr, I met Paul McCartney. That wasn't those guys in the films, that wasn't guys. It was guys pretending to be what they thought those guys were like, and I had conversations, with people after the film that, that knew the guys better than I did. And it's just like, it's a work of fiction, and I'm sure that the Hendrix film, I'm sure people, will go along and come away from it, maybe like you did, Jeffrey, and enjoy it and say it was an enjoyable watch. But you weren't watching Jimi Hendrix on screen. When you look at my film, what you're watching Jimi Hendrix
Oh,
on screen.
absolutely. No, the authentic feeling is unmistakable and undeniable in your film, as well as the earlier approved family sanctioned documentary, which is initially called A Film About Jimi Hendrix. It is now just called Jimi Hendrix. It's no, there's no question that this is
No,
the.
that was a great film. I watched that film when I was a kid. I think it was the first time I'd seen, like a music documentary in the cinema. I remember going along and watching it, and it was great because it was mainly, performances back to back. And when I was a kid, at 14, 13 years old, that's exactly what I wanted, I didn't want to hear people talking about him. I wanted to see him on stage. I've never seen any footage of Hendrix, back in the day. But now, I've seen the footage so many times that now, I want to know more about Jimi Hendrix. And, I've made a bunch of Hendrix films in the past anyway. I made a film about the Monterey concert. I made a film about, the band The Gypsies gig, et cetera. And it was mainly about, the event as opposed to being about the guy himself, and that's why we spent a lot of time on this film. We could have interviewed 100 musicians, or 100 young guys who, you know, so we try to be true and, you know, whenever we could, get to people who were going to tell us, you know, what they thought of Jimi Hendrix, you know, and that's what we needed, you know, for this film anyway.
Right. The it's interesting though not to obsess about the Ridley film, but it does introduce a thing which is that the Hendrix family is not exactly known for being gracious and cooperative and collaborative when people have wanted to make films. They've been actually the very opposite. They've been
I don't know much about their dealings. Right, all I know is that if you've got something which you own, why would you give it away?
Oh no! Like nobody wants to. You think you should give away?
That's the thing. You know, it's like it's the same. You know, with any big band, any big act, right? Whether you're the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or you're Jimi Hendrix or you're the Who, you don't give away your legacy to any Tom, Dick, and Harry that comes along.
Right.
Because you know what happens is it gets diluted, and it's like anything. You know, the acts who are big acts who remain. Who people still love, they haven't been dragged through the mud, you know, and I think that's why, you know, the big acts that tend to hold on with, whether that's right or wrong, it's not for me to say. All I know is that, you know, when I've dealt with you know, the Hendrix estate, if I've asked for, I thought to use, you know, this clip of footage or that clip of footage or this piece of music, they've bent over backwards in order to allow me to use that footage. And also, you know, I'm a filmmaker, I've worked with big acts. You know, I've worked with the Beatles, I've worked with the Who, I've worked with Elton John, I've worked with the Doors, right. I've worked with Pink Floyd, you know. And my focus is always on, I don't want to know what was going on after midnight when we were back in the hotel room with our girlfriends. Everybody does that. I want to know what was going on, how they made those records, you know. That's why I love those people. And, you know, I don't, you know, look, in the 60s, everybody took drugs. Everybody slept with women. You didn't have to be Jimi Hendrix or, you know, Jim Morrison to be getting off on that sort of stuff. Everybody did it, but not everybody wrote Purple Haze. Not everybody was able to do a version of All Along the Watchtower like what Hendrix did. And that's what I've always focused on. You know, it's like there's two sides. If some people want to hear about, oh, when Jimmy did this, he did that. You know, someone said to me, very famous, and I won't actually mention their name, people have told stories about people that weren't even in the room. They've never even met the guy. And, you know, generally find that the people who will come out to talk about it have never met the guy. You know, they were never there. You know, it's like, if Jimmy cannot say something for himself, I don't want to have somebody who wasn't around, who didn't know it, say, I think Jimmy did this. I think Jimmy did that. Right. You know, and it's just like, that tends to be what happens. You know, I want to know about the music. And if somebody, you know, there's a hundred books been written about Hendrix. Just say there's 100 books or so been written about Jim Morrison or those guys. You know, if you want to read the books and believe what you read in the books, read it, you know. But I want to listen to music because when I hear the music and I see the guy on stage, I make my own opinion. There's no one telling me what to think. You know,
no one says,
Bob, you know what I mean? It's like, and that's what I do. You know, I make music films, you know, and I make documentaries about artists. I want to know about the art. I want to know about the guy, but I don't want to hear tittle-tattle that someone made. This might have happened, you know.
Well, this is what is unmistakable to anyone who listens to Are You Experienced, Axis Bold as Love, and Electric Ladyland. The first one and the first two is that his lyrics, his visions, his songs are completely and utterly informed by having experienced, spiritual ecstasy and Satori, which was clearly through the ingestion of psychedelic drugs. But that's what was going on back then, and he was clearly writing about that. I mean, everything.
Well, I'll tell you this, right? I know people, and I'm not going to name drop here, so I won't. I know people who have written psychedelic songs and never taken a cup of acid in their life. You know, it's like, it's by osmosis. You know, it's like, I know people who have written songs about being on heroin and they've never taken heroin before. You know, it was the 60s, like you say, you know, what was going on, you know, and that was the culture. You know, it's like, if you take it into the days of punk rock, you know, during my era, it was amphetamines, you know, and that informed the music, you know. But it's just like, there was people who were making, playing fast songs and like singing about this and that, who didn't take amphetamines, you know. It's just like, that's just, it's part of the culture. And like it says in the Hendrix film, you know, the film that we made, you know, Bob Santelli says Hendrix was part of the counterculture. He took the same kind of drugs, he wore the same kind of clothes, he spoke the same language, and what more can you say? You know, Jimmy's not here to talk for himself.
If he wants, he is. He is here for talk for himself. He's here with his songs. His songs make it very clear that he was a traveler. He went in that realm, you know.
But like I say, you know, that's the thing. If you want to listen to something, that's, you listen to Purple Haze and you're going to take anything you want from that song. You know, Wind Cries Mary. You know, it's like, that's the great thing about music. You know, we want to form our own opinion and make our own pictures. You know, what was Bob Dylan saying on that song? What was John Lennon saying there, or Paul McCartney, or Bob Marley? That's the great thing about it. You know, it's like we make our own pictures for it, and that's the great thing about music. And for some kid who's hearing those records for the first time, you know, who's like 15-year-old, who hasn't went near a drug in his life, he's going to get an experience through listening to those records. That's right. Not going to be induced by dropping acid, and you know, that's what music does, you know. And it's not like, and believe me, I've taken my drugs in my time, you know, so I'm not coming from drugs are wrong. I tell you what, Jeffrey, you name it, there's a chance I've taken it, you know. But I'm not going to say this is, you know, I'm not going to preach to do what's right and what's wrong, you know. That's my
take. Do you think that there's any likelihood that perhaps John Lennon never experienced lysergic acid diethylamide before he wrote Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds? Do you think he might have imagined
that? Well, you know, John said it. You know, John said it himself. You know, John has said it on film, and in the same way that George Harrison said it in the anthology.
Yep.
They took LSD. You know, they say it. If they want to say it, it's up to those guys. Those guys to say it.
Yeah.
It's not my job or anybody else that we interview to say it on behalf of Jimi Hendrix. You know, if Jimi had been on film saying, hey, you know, man, I took 20 caps of acid one night,
right.
Believe me, Jeffrey, I would have used it in the film. But because it's not, because Jimmy's not talking about it, we could have pulled any guy to say, okay, let's say Jimmy did this, Jimmy did that. You know, it's like Eddie Kramer talks about the music, and people that know him talk about the side. You know, no one can speak on his behalf with regards to that stuff, because it wouldn't be fair. You know?
No, you're talking about a very scrupulous and very commendable way of doing a documentary, which is going only with you absolutely have from the source. No hearsay, no secondhand stuff. That warrants complete respect on my part. I completely agree with you. But I would reiterate one last time, and I'll leave it alone. It's obvious what he was writing songs about. It's not suggested. It's dead obvious what he had been through.
Yeah, I know. You know? Yeah, it's still, you know, it's like, I'm not saying, it's not for me to say, right? Jimi Hendrix was around in the 60s, right? That's what people did in the 60s. But what I'm also saying is, there are people, I'm not saying this applies to Hendrix or any of those guys, who wrote psychedelic songs who never touched psychedelic drugs. I'm not saying that.
Well, then they're phonies. Then those guys are phonies. Whoever you're talking about, because no, anybody, you know, that tries like, to write about it and you doesn't,
know,
you know.
The thing is, right? You know. I was a musician. I was in a band, right? I could write a song about being in Vietnam. Yeah. I haven't been to Vietnam.
Yeah.
But I know enough about it to be able to write a song about being in Vietnam.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I'm saying. Is I'm not saying that. You know, come on, it's the 60s. Yeah. How? You know, Jimi Hendrix was the king of psychedelic rock. You know, Hendrix, but what I'm saying is, right, if I'd had footage of Jimmy saying on screen or on tape or audio, and I've listened to all the audio, if he was saying, hey man, I did this, I did that, believe me, I would have used it.
Right.
I would have used that in the film. In the same way that when I interviewed George Harrison and I interviewed Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr for the Beatles anthology, it came from the horse's mouth. So it was in the film. It was in the Beatles anthology.
Once again, that's a totally honorable and the best way to go with anything. Go right from the horse's mouth, get it straight. You have my 100% respect on that. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that you're a good filmmaker, and you did a good job. No question about it.
Yeah,
but
well,
I would also say,
all I'm saying is, at the end of the day, like, you know, I get employed by you know, by the Hendrix estate, right?
Right.
And it's like, you know, they employ me because they trust me, right? Now, you know, I make the film that I know American masters will want, and I know the film that the Hendrix estate will want. And I don't want to compete with films where they haven't got any of Jimmy's music in, or they've got some guy who said, oh, Jimmy and I were hanging out, and we did that, we did this. You know, it's just like, it's not for me to say. I make a film based on the music, because, you know, at the end, I interviewed Elton John, and he told me, it's in the film, how much cocaine that he took. He's telling me it. If he wants to offer up that information, it will go in the film because I'm making it. But if somebody else is speaking, I'm not going to put it in because someone's going to see that and think, hang on a minute, why is he saying he wasn't in the room?
You
know,
I think
how many
that
people say that? And that,
I think you. There's one instance where you do say that he dropped with Linda Keith in late 66. Did you not say that, or is that something I got somewhere else?
No, well, it says in the film, you know, it says that,
right.
You know, we could only do what he did with
right.
the aid of chemicals, right?
Yeah.
And that's obvious, you know,
right.
It's like,
yeah.
And then, like, you know, the guys, it's, you know, it's there, it's in the film. It's like, come on, Jeffrey, you're a smart guy, right? You've listened to Love or Confusion. You've listened to Are You Experienced?
Yeah.
You know, come on. You know, you don't need, you know, we aren't children here. We don't need people to spell it out for us. You can say it, you know. Look at the guy. Look at the way he looks on stage. You know, he was part of the counterculture.
I'm just saying, 100 years from now, a person who's not attuned to what was going back then and didn't really understand the music could watch your film and infer that Hendrix, who is a brilliant blues and rock guitarist anyway, he simply came along and he absorbed the psychedelic rock stylings of music at the time, and he blended it as he was one of the most brilliant guitarists. He took his chops with blues and soul, and he just mixed it all together as a way of kind of, you know, making it, because it was going to work. One could watch your film and theoretically think, well, I guess he just was a really brilliant musician who knew how to make this stuff work, but he wasn't necessarily a participant or an adventurer in a psychedelic sense. He was just a good musician. One could watch your film and infer that. You could.
Yeah, well, if that's, you know, or somebody could watch it and say, hang on a minute, hey, you know, listen to that Purple Haze. I know what was going on there. Come on. You got to give them some intelligence. You know, he's Jimi Hendrix, you know, for God's sake.
Right.
You know, you've seen him on stage. You've heard those records. You know, you put your headphones on and you listen to, you know, all you experienced, and
right.
You didn't hear what was going on, you know.
Mm.
But all I'm saying is, you know, it's not for me to say on behalf of Jimi Hendrix or
right.
for anybody else to say on behalf of Jimi Hendrix. You know, the guy recorded a lot of records. He was great on stage, and, you know, however, what John Lennon said, whatever gets you through the night, you know, John Lennon said it. I don't want to say it on his behalf.
By the way, there is a lot of stuff that I saw. I was so charged by your film that I went and got the old documentary, a film about Jimi Hendrix. And
yeah,
there is,
really,
and there's
really
a lot of stuff that you've taken from that documentary that is reused here, which is totally fine. But it's all, you've got like the Jimmy, the Little Richard, which was originally in this documentary in 73. There's
No, I didn't use any Little Richard in this film.
Little Richard is not in your film?
No.
My mistake, then. I'm sorry. I could have sworn that I saw him in your film. I'm sorry.
No. You might have seen stills of Hendrix, you know, with Little Richard. You know, that's definitely in there.
Yeah.
But we didn't use any interview footage of Little Richard.
Okay, sorry. I could have sworn I saw it, but I stand corrected. I thought I did see it.
Jeffrey, have you been taking mind-expanding drugs?
Maybe. There's Cox is in there. There's stuff from Billy Cox from the 70s. And Hendrix's dad seems to be the same camera footage. No, you didn't take anything from this?
And the Billy Cox stuff that's in our film, I did that interview.
Okay.
I did that interview last year, right?
All right.
But, Jimmy's dad, you know, it's in the film about Jimi Hendrix, because Jimmy's dad isn't around anymore.
Yes, of course, he passed.
You know,
I know.
So we use whatever, you know, we've got to use footage that's available. It's
right.
Like, you know, it's like Hendrix isn't around anymore, so what do?
Right.
We use archive, you know, that exists.
Of
that's
course.
What you do when you're making an archive-based film, right?
Right. By the way, there's a thing about here's what I, now, to correct me again, because obviously you're talking to a guy whose memory is not perfect, but there's a bit in the film when they talk about his passing, when you talk about his passing, or others do, and he, the way I heard it was that Monica Daneman, by the way, is Monica Daneman still with us? Is she still around?
I think she's passed already, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
She passed?
I think so. Don't quote me on that.
Right. I don't know either way. I just know that she was in the other documentary. But she said that she had these sleeping pills which were stronger than Jimmy realized. Yeah. Apparently, he probably had a previous experience where he maybe took one or two and it wasn't enough, and
Jimmy used to take Mandrax.
I see.
You know, that was Jimmy's sleeping tablet of choice, right? She was German, so she had stronger sleeping tablets, and Jimmy took more than what he would normally take if he was taking Mandrax.
You know,
that's been proven. That's why, you know, that's in the film.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who did the autopsy, it's in the film. You know, it's like, if people are saying, oh, you know, we had somebody who said Jimmy died of a heroin overdose, why isn't that in the film? He said he didn't die of a heroin overdose. You know, the guy took too many sleeping tablets, like a lot of people did at the time. You know, it's like, you know, you took uppers and downers, you know, you can't sleep, so what do you do? You know, like then, you know, we don't know now what we knew, you know, we didn't know then what people knew now about what you do take and what you don't take. You know, a lot of people at that, during that period of time they were dying, you know, through taking too many or taking the wrong sort of drug or whatever. But, you know, it's like, you know, personally, I wouldn't have had anything in the film about how he died.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, and, you know, it's like, let people draw their own conclusions, you know. It's like, because the guy that's in the film, Chris Walsh, you know, he wasn't there, but he was a journalist at the time, and he was around, he was writing in the English newspapers, and that's what was in the papers, you know, that's why he's in there. Right. You know, like, if there'd been somebody who had been, you know, it's like, It's a real difficult one, because people know that he died, and there's been films made about Jimi Hendrix's last 24 hours, and did this happen, did that happen? It's just like, you know, the people who were closest to him, who were still around, like Billy Cox, Eddie Kramer, you know, Colette, Fame, we interviewed those people, you know, people who were around with him at the time and were part of his inner circle. We reached out to everybody who we could get. We tried to get his brother, Leon, to talk.
Yeah.
We chased him for 8 months. I think he had his own project, you know, going on at the time. Jimi Hendrix Guitar Hero, which is just like, you know, have you seen it? You know, it's like, and, you know, we tried to get those people. We reached out. This film was a long time in the making, you know.
Right.
There was people that we had people coming out saying, hey, do you want to interview me? You know, it's like, we tried wherever we could to stay focused on the people that knew him. And, you know, obviously in a film like this, you know, you're going to bring in, you know, like people like David Frick, who write for Rolling Stone, because it's good to have somebody who come at it, you know, would give you his insight into why Hendrix was great. You know?
I love that quote of his. I love that Rolling Stone guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. You know, he certainly knows his stuff. You know?
Yeah. I love that line where he said that he exercised the ultimate civil right by making the kind of music exactly what he wanted to do, and he wasn't hamstrung or hung up about trying to be a quote-unquote black musician or any color musician. He just did exactly what came to him and what his music was about. So that was cool.
Yeah, exactly. That was a big way of expressing himself. You know, he didn't say, I'm not going to have those guys. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. But, you know, from what we see, he wasn't, you know, there wasn't any color bar as far as, you know, Hendrix went. You know, 1 week, you know, 1 month he's playing with Mitch and Billy.
Right.
And then he's got Buddy Miles in there, and Noel's not in the band anymore. And, you know, it's like, I think Hendrix just wanted to play with good musicians. You know, I think that's the way it should be.
Right.
You know, you don't say, I don't want this guy in because he's got the wrong color trousers or his hair's not right. It's like, if someone can do the job, you get them in. You know, it's like, I think, from what I've seen with the people that Hendrix played with, that was the way he was, you know.
Yet there was a period that I've read about, again, but he did have conflicted feelings in the later stages. I don't know, somewhere towards late 68, 69, 70, where he felt that he was, maybe not being kind of black enough in his attitudes, and he was a little kind of like he didn't want to keep doing the the playing with his teeth and the stunt stuff. He wanted to get cleaner and more pure in his music. And there's a
go ahead. Yeah, that's true. No, because I made the band The Gypsies documentary, right? Which was when Hendrix, you know, formed the band The Gypsies, you know, which was three black guys, whereas in the past it was Hendrix and two white guys, and that was Hendrix, you know, and two black guys. Right. And I think if you watch that film, you know, that's what, you know, the people who knew him again, which mm-hmm. the people who knew him, they say that, you know, he was getting pressure, you know, to appeal, and also Hendrix, you know, and he said this himself, you know, he wanted to appeal, you know, why wasn't any Puerto Ricans in the audience? Why was it mainly white kids? And, you know, I'm sure Band of Gypsies, you know, like it said in our documentary, it was him wanting to get, you know, he wasn't getting played on black radio at the time because it was rock music. You know, it's like people didn't know. It's not like now where everybody knows what's going on. People probably thought Jimi Hendrix was white at the time.
You know, because, did you ever speak to somebody who actually believed
that? Like, you know, you've got to remember that Jimi Hendrix didn't appear on national television in America until 1969, so nobody would have seen him, you know, in this parts of America. You live there where, you know, in the parts of America where they wouldn't have seen Jimi Hendrix. They wouldn't have, you know, they probably wouldn't even hear him on the radio, you know.
Right.
It's changed now. Everybody knows everything about everybody.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the, you know, that was one of the main focuses of this film, was to say how this guy who turns up to play at Monterey mm-hmm. in June of 67, you know, without the aid, didn't do the Ed Sullivan show, you know, didn't do the Cavett show in 1969, how he went from being where he was, turning up at Monterey almost as a nobody, to becoming, you know, the headlining act at Woodstock in 1969, you know. It was word of mouth, and it was through gigging and hard work, and that hard work pays off, you know.
I like the way you highlighted and made clear to dilettantes who don't know enough about him that what he, that set that he played at Woodstock was not just that one song, but it was really quite a brilliant set altogether. And it was...
But that's the thing, because I think people think that he turned to Woodstock and played Star-Spangled Banner and then walked off. You know, Hendrix did one of the longest concerts of his life.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
At the end of Woodstock, you know, and people say, you know, oh, Hendrix, he was, you know, he was off his face, he was taking all these drugs. You know, come on, you cannot get on stage at 8 o'clock in the morning after being up for how many days without any sleep and give a performance like that with a new band.
Yeah.
You know, come on, you know, if I have three pints of beer, I can't even play three chords on the guitar. So, you know, it's like the guy was focused, and to be that focused at that time in the morning, mm-hmm. having been awake for as long as Hendrix had been, right. and under the stress of a new band, and, you know, it wasn't the band that the management wanted, and who was going to be turning up and playing. It's like, you know, come on, you've got to have your act together to be able to pull that off.
You know, it's interesting that you know, obviously, about the whole sound of Band of Gypsies and how that sound. There is something about the kind of very basic kind of 4/4 sound of Buddy Miles's drumming that kind of kept it rooted in a certain direction. The music didn't really like jazz up and go and loosen up the way it did with Mitch Mitchell, because Mitch Mitchell was more of a jazzy drummer. And I always felt that was not the wisest thing for him. I think that a cooler drummer, I mean, not to put down Buddy Miles, he was really great. I love his backbeat and his solid quality, but he didn't seem to be ushering or goading Hendrix into other realms. He seemed to keep it kind of basic.
Yeah, well, I think Hendrix, I don't know what made Jimmy do what he did, but, you know, he was experimenting, you know, and if it hadn't been Buddy Miles, it might have been somebody else, but he just wanted to be playing, you know. It says in the film, Hendrix would play with anybody, you know, he would get up in the bar, he'd play bass, the guitar the wrong way around, you know, because, and also, you know, Hendrix liked Buddy Miles. I interviewed Buddy when Buddy was alive, and Buddy was a larger-than-life character, and he was Jimmy's friend, you know, but, you know, so he got him in, and it was like a time that, you know, he had to get a band together, because the whole contractual thing, and they were jamming, and that became the band that played the gig at the Fillmore, you know, for the live album. You know, it's like, you know, you should watch the Band of Gypsies documentary, and you should get out on DVD, and it's got all that story about that band. In this film, we didn't have time to go into every band and every, you know, concert in as much detail that we would have done. I didn't want to make a 10-hour film. I didn't want to make, you know, I think 2 hours is a long film. Right. You know, but it's like, you know, people say, oh, why didn't you put this in? Why didn't you put that in? You know, you've got to make choices, because otherwise it becomes made by, you know, committee and, you know, in the off things, which, you know, which you miss out. There's some great songs. Crosstown Traffic didn't make the cut, you know.
Yeah.
Some great songs that didn't get in. You know, we could have had 15 minutes of Machine Gun. That was in the Band of Gypsies film. We'd already done that, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you don't want to keep repeating yourself. You know, it's hard enough as it is. But, you know, I think, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that hopefully in 10 years' time, when people want to hear as close to the true story about Jimi Hendrix, you know, they'll watch that. They'll watch the film, and that'll give them a good insight into why the guy was a genius, you know.
Well, I want to just tell you, man, I do respect your film. It was a good ride. I loved that I saw it in a in a good screening room at the old CAA headquarters in Los Angeles. I think it's really essential to see a film like yours with a really good sound system, because you really have you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, it is. I think it's like, you know, I did a version where there was more concert performances, which worked great on a big screen in 5.1, but, you know, sometimes that won't come across on television. Like, you know, somebody said to me years ago, you know, why have you intercut the concert performances, you know, with interviews? I said, because if you show, you know, a 15-minute, you know, performance piece on television, if you're watching it on a standard, you know, home TV set, which hasn't got big stereo speakers, it sometimes doesn't come across. Mm. It's not being heard or seen in the best light, you know. Like, if I'd been making, like, a cinema version of this film, it would have been more performance and less talk. Because, you know, no matter what anybody's saying on screen, right, to get to the essence of Jimi Hendrix, nothing gets to the essence of what the guy was about as much as seeing him play guitar. Right. Seeing and hearing him play guitar. He says more in, you know, one guitar solo than, you know, anybody can say about him, because that's him. That is Jimi Hendrix, you know. There's no filter there. Right. What you see is what you get. But, you know, that was the film about Jimi Hendrix in 1973. You know, they ran the concert performances full length, linked together, you know, with a bunch of quotes. That's what I wanted. I saw that film in the cinema and I loved it, because it was on the big screen. Jimi was like 30 foot tall, you know.
Right.
That was great. Yeah. But listen, Jeffrey, I've got somebody else calling me at 7:30.
Sure,
but,
man. Thank you very much for your time.
Good to speak to you. And thanks for your comments, and I hope you watch it again when it goes out.
I intend to, and thank you for taking the extra effort and trying to hook up. I'm sorry for the phone problems.
No problem. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Be well.
See you, man. Bye.
Take care. Bye.